software, a little like Apple's OS X version names such as Mavericks, El Capitan, and Sierra. Let's take a quick look at these five different types of Ethereum software. 1. Olympic, a testnet. Launched May 2015, a testing release where coins are not compatible with real ETH. A testnet still runs in parallel to the main live network so that developers can test their code. The testnet operates in the same way as the live network, but there is much less mining competition, as the coins are not tradable on exchanges. They are defined as having zero value. 2. Frontier. Launched the 30th of July, 2015. An initial live release with a way for people to mine Ether and build and run contracts. 3. Homestead. Launched the 14th of March, 2016. There were some protocol changes and more stability. 4. Metropolis. This was designed to prepare Ethereum for a move from proof of work to proof of stake. Metropolis was split into two upgrades, Byzantium and Constantinople. Byzantium was released in October 2017 at block 4,370,000. It included changes to set the stage for private transactions, sped up transaction processing, important for scalability, and improved some smart contract functionality. The most visually obvious change was reducing the mining reward from 5 Ether per block to 3 Ether. The Constantinople upgrade will be another upgrade to set the stage for the move to proof of stake, which will run on Casper. And 5. Serenity. Future launch, moving from proof of work to proof of stake, run on Casper. The DAO hack. There is a concept called a decentralized autonomous organization. The idea is that an automated company or entity runs itself according to some encoded charter without human intervention or management. It just does what it says it will do. A common example is a self-driving taxi that makes money by providing a taxi service and can go and get itself repaired or filled with petrol. Call me old-fashioned, but this sounds fantastical to me without a human ultimately responsible for the actions of the taxi. Anyway, some enthusiasts seem to love the idea. In 2016, a team from a German company called Slockit pivoted from their business model of making smart locks that can be opened using tokens on blockchains and built a sort of automated venture capital or VC company as a smart contract deployed on Ethereum's public blockchain. They called it the DAO in all capital letters. This is a confusing name. It is like calling a bank the bank or a company the company. Anyway, the DAO is an example of a DAO. The idea behind the DAO is that it would be a cryptocurrency fund for funding startups. Investors who want to invest in relevant startups would send money in the form of Ether to the smart contract, and the smart contract would issue them DAO tokens in proportion to their investment. The smart contract would be the pot of money used to fund the startups, like a traditional VC fund. In a normal VC fund, the investors, called limited partners, give money to the fund and expect the management of the VC firm to manage the funds and to generate a return by investing in successful ventures. In the DAO, the investors would have a more active role. They would receive DAO tokens in return for their investment and use them to vote on what startups receive funding. In this way, the investors would have direct input into which startups get funding, instead of devolving that responsibility to a management team. The smart contract would govern a voting process, and at the end of a vote, cryptocurrency would be released to the startups that had the most funding votes. That was the theory behind the DAO. Of course, there was actual human intervention. Someone, a management team, had to curate a list of potential startups that investors could vote on, so in fact it wasn't much of a DAO after all. All it did was automate the provision of funds. Anyway, none of this really mattered because the DAO failed before it invested in a single startup. Over a one-month funding period in May 2016, the DAO managed to raise the equivalent of over $150 million in Ether from over 11,000 separate addresses. This suggests a large number of investors, but it's hard to tell, as a single investor may have multiple Ether addresses. Ether was trading between $10 and $20 per Ether, and the DAO held about 15% of all Ether in existence. In June, a hacker managed to find a way to get the DAO to release 3,641,694 Ether, then worth about $50 to $60 million, into another account controlled by the hacker. This sent the price of Ether down almost 50%. When the hack was discovered and investigated, some white hat, ethical hackers replicated the attack and drained the rest of the Ether into their own accounts. This is like the goodies stealing money from a broken vault so that the baddie can't steal it. Now remember that smart contracts simply do as they promise they will do, and DAOs just do what they have been programmed. The user agreement is right there in the code. If you find a way to get the smart contract to do something that it has been programmed to do, and it does it, is it a hack? Or is it just behaving according to the rules which you all subscribed to? Anyway, this was considered a hack, and the Ethereum Foundation suggested an update for all Ethereum participants which would in effect freeze the Ether that had been drained by specifying a blacklist which would invalidate any transactions trying to spend money from the theft account. This goes against the vision of a censorship-resistant world computer, but this was an emergency, and many early supporters of Ethereum were in danger of having their money stolen. So, lost money took precedence over values. The pressure on the Ethereum Foundation to find a way to unwind the transaction must have been huge. Just before the proposed implementation of this change, a bug was found with the proposed change, so the blacklist wasn't adopted. The Ethereum Foundation then made a proposal to unwind the specific transactions related to the theft and allow DAO investors to withdraw their invested Ether. Again, this transgressed the very principles of a censorship-resistant world computer. In cryptocurrency land, it's apparently fine to cheer for censorship resistance unless you've lost money. In July 2016, a vote was taken to determine the fate of the stolen Ether, and the result was that the community decided to install an upgrade in what is known as a hard fork that would move the stolen Ether to a new smart contract and have them returned to the original investors. This was quite controversial. After all, an unstoppable, immutable world computer was stopped and mutated to cater to a small number of people who lost a lot of money to a smart contract which functioned exactly as it specified it would. Ethereum Classic. A small but vocal part of the community thought that unwinding contradicted the values of Ethereum and continued with the old Ethereum software. This resulted in two Ethereum blockchains, one which returned the stolen funds to the DAO investors, another which didn't. The one that didn't became known as Ethereum Classic. Ethereum and Ethereum Classic have a shared history until block 1,920,000 on July 2016, after which point the blockchains diverge. Anyone who owned Ethereum before the fork now had an equal amount of ETH tokens recorded on the Ethereum blockchain and ETC tokens recorded on the Ethereum Classic blockchain. This was good for anyone who had ETH before the hard fork, as, to all intents and purposes, they received free money in the form of ETC. The Parity Bug. Parity is a piece of Ethereum software written by Parity Technologies. It acts as a full node on the Ethereum network, storing the blockchain, running contracts, forwarding transactions, etc. At time of writing, about a third of Ethereum nodes run Parity software. You can see this in pie chart form by reviewing image 4.45 in the supplementary PDF. Parity also contains some advanced wallet software that you can use to store Ether. The wallet has had a couple of critical bugs. On the 20th of July, 2017, Parity's code was updated to fix a bug that had enabled a hacker to steal $32 million worth of Ether from Parity multi-signature wallets. However, this update itself contained a bug. A smart contract was deployed, which was relied upon for some wallet functionality, but it had a vulnerability. Anyone could convert this smart contract into a multi-signature wallet, take ownership of it, and then suicide it, destroying this particular piece of code on which multi-signature wallets created after the 20th of July relied, freezing the assets in the wallets. So, someone with the GitHub handle DevOps199 did just that on the 6th of November, 2017. You can see their post announcing this as image 4.46 in the supplementary PDF. Almost 600 wallets were affected, with a combined balance of over 500,000 Ether, valued at the time at about $150 million. Ironically, Gavin Wood, founder of Parity Technologies, had about 300,000 Ether in a Parity wallet, related to funds raised in an ICO called Polkadot. Those funds are frozen. The Ether are still there in the wallets, but currently can't be sent. As of early 2018, developers are still investigating if anything can be done to fix this bug. Actors in the Ethereum ecosystem. The Ethereum Foundation. The Ethereum Foundation is a non-profit organization registered as Stiftung Ethereum in Switzerland, whose mission is to promote and support Ethereum platform and base layer research, development, and education to bring decentralized protocols and tools to the world that empower developers to produce next-generation decentralized applications, or dApps, and together build a more globally accessible, more free, and more trustworthy internet. The foundation's job is to manage the funds raised in the Ether presale in a way that furthers Ethereum. Mainly, it pays the core development team a salary, but it also offers grants to developers to tackle specific problems. For instance, in March 2018, grants were awarded to fund projects that provided scaling and security solutions to Ethereum. Vitalik Buterin, known as the creator of Ethereum, sits on the council of the foundation, and the foundation has a great deal of influence into the roadmap of Ethereum. In theory, Ethereum participants, miners, and bookkeepers don't have to implement any software changes made by the foundation, but in practice, they do. Ethereum Enterprise Alliance. The Ethereum Enterprise Alliance is a nonprofit industry group launched in March 2017, whose goal seems to be to make Ethereum suitable for enterprise use. From their materials, it's hard to understand whether this means businesses using the public Ethereum blockchain, or if it means adapting the Ethereum code to make it suitable for industry use cases. The website says, "The Enterprise Ethereum Alliance connects Fortune 500 enterprises, startups, academics, and technology vendors with Ethereum subject matter experts. Together, we will learn from and build upon the only smart contract supporting blockchain currently running in real-world production, Ethereum, to define enterprise-grade software capable of handling the most complex, highly demanding applications at the speed of business." From the website, the vision of the EEA is to 1. Be an open-source standard, not a product. 2. Address enterprise deployment requirements. 3. Evolve in tandem with advances in public Ethereum. And 4. Leverage existing standards. Unfortunately, I could not find any further detail as to what this means. The mission of the Alliance states, 1. That EEA is a 501c6 nonprofit corporation. 2. A clear roadmap for enterprise features and requirements. 3. Robust governance model and accountability, clarity around IP and licensing models for open source technology, and 4, resources for businesses to learn about Ethereum and leverage this groundbreaking technology to address specific industry use cases. Its members are an impressive list of large established companies as well as new startups. See image 4.46 in the supplementary PDF for a list of the launch members. Members pay between $3,000 and $25,000 in annual dues, for which they get the following benefits. You can see those benefits as image 4.47 in the supplementary PDF. The EEA website also explains why prescriptive members should join the EEA. See image 4.48 in the supplementary PDF that shows a screenshot of the stated reasons. Ether price. Like Bitcoin, the price of Ether has also been through ups and downs. Ethereum's crowd sale was at a price of 2,000 Ether per one Bitcoin. And at the time, from July to August 2014, one Bitcoin was worth about $500, making one Ether equal to 25 cents. At its peak in early 2018, the price of Ether almost touched $1,500. So to date, Ether has been a highly successful cryptocurrency in terms of price. To see a chart of this, review image 4.49 in the supplementary PDF. Compared to Bitcoin, Ethereum has an additional use case. Its token Ether is often used in ICOs. A company that runs an ICO will create a smart contract on Ethereum, which will automatically create tokens and assign them to Ethereum addresses who have sent Ether to a related smart contract. This means you can run an automated ICO on Ethereum, as long as investors pay in Ether or another token recorded on Ethereum. Forks. What is a cryptocurrency fork? When people use the word fork, they can mean two different but related things. One, a fork of a code base. Or two, a fork of a live blockchain called a chain split. The difference is whether you're creating an entirely new ledger, which is achieved by forking a code base, the code behind the node software, or creating a new coin that has a shared history with an existing coin by forking a blockchain. Let's explore both of these. A fork of a code base. A fork of a code base in general is where you copy the code of a particular program so you can contribute to it or adapt it. This is encouraged in open source software, where code is deliberately shared for anyone to tinker with. In cryptocurrency, this means that you copy the code behind a popular cryptocurrency node software, for example, Bitcoin Core, maybe tweak it and change a few parameters, and then run the code to create an entirely new blockchain starting from a blank ledger. You'd say you forked Bitcoin's code to create a new coin. This is how many altcoins, alternative coins, were created in 2013 and 2014. Litecoin, for example, was created by using a copy of Bitcoin's code with some parameters changed, including the speed of block generation and the kind of calculations that the miners had to do in the proof-of-work challenge. The key here is that when you run the new code, you create a new empty blockchain ledger from scratch with an entirely new genesis block. In the popular open-source code-sharing platform GitHub, you can easily fork, or copy, a project's code with a few clicks of a mouse. You then have your very own copy, which you can edit. These code-based forks are common and encouraged in open-source technology development, as they lead to innovation. A fork of a live blockchain. Chain splits. A fork of a live blockchain, better described as a chain split, is more interesting. Chain splits can happen by accident or on purpose. An accidental chain split is where there is an uncontentious upgrade to the blockchain software, and some proportion of the network omits or forgets to upgrade their software, leading to a number of blocks being produced by them that are incompatible with the rest of the network. According to BitMEX research, this has happened a few times in Bitcoin's history, with 3 identified chain splits lasting approximately 51, 24, and 6 blocks in 2010, 2013, and 2015, respectively. So, forks can occur even when there is no contention over rule changes, creating some temporary confusion as to the real state of the blockchain during the period where there is more than one candidate blockchain. Accidental chain splits tend to be resolved quickly with the small proportion of participants upgrading their software and discarding the incompatible blocks. A deliberate chain split occurs when a group of participants of a live network thinks that things should be done a different way from the rest of the participants and runs some new software with changes to the protocol rules to create a new coin that has a shared history with the old coin. This deliberately splits the chain at a specific block according to a well-communicated plan. Deliberate chain splits can be successful with both assets continuing to live and develop, or fail where there is not enough participatory interest and the value of the token drops to 0 and stops being mined. To execute a successful deliberate chain split, you need to publicly rally and persuade a group of miners, bookkeepers, exchanges, and wallets that your new rules are better than the existing rules. They will need to agree to support your new coin, creating a community supporting a new coin that people can buy and sell, store, and use. When the chain splits, you have created a new coin with different protocol rules, but which has a shared history with the original coin. Anyone with a balance on the blockchain before the split now has a balance in 2 different coins after the split. So the determination of whether something is a protocol upgrade, a failed fork, or a successful fork is really about who chooses to adopt the new rules. Then, one of 3 things will happen. 1, if new protocol rules are adopted by the vast majority of the community, then it is called a protocol upgrade, and those who don't upgrade have a choice to maintain the old rules as an attempted fork or to join the majority. 2, if new protocol rules are adopted by very few participants, you have an unviable fork which may ultimately fail. And 3, if new protocol rules are adopted by enough participants to maintain a community and interest, then it is a successful fork. What's the result of a deliberate, successful fork? The upshot is that anyone who owns some of the original cryptocurrency continues to have the original cryptocurrency plus the same number of tokens in new forked cryptocurrency. A quick analogy. Imagine you usually fly with an airline called Crypto Air, where you earn loyalty points. And let's say you have accumulated 500 points with them. Now, imagine that some staff from Crypto Air get upset and leave to create their own separate airline, New Crypto Air. They take a copy of the customer list with them, including the record of how many loyalty points each customer has. Now, you have 500 points with Crypto Air and 500 points with New Crypto Air. But you can't spend your New Crypto Air points with Crypto Air or vice versa. They are incompatible. If you then spend points with one airline, it doesn't affect your points on the other airline. Your old Crypto Air points continue to have whatever value they had, whereas your new Crypto Air points will need to establish their own value. Not a perfect analogy, but I think it's helpful. If coin holders had 100 tokens before a successful cryptocurrency fork, have they doubled their money? In one sense, yes. They have doubled the number of tokens they have, as they now have 100 units of the old coin and 100 units of the new coin, and they can spend them independently. In reality, they haven't doubled their money, as the 2 coins original plus new, have different fiat currency values. In practice, the old currency tends to maintain its fiat value, whereas the new one must float on exchanges with a new ticker symbol, and it will usually start trading at a lower value. How does a deliberate chain split work? Participants of a fork make changes to the protocol rules and market their philosophy to a wide audience of miners, wallet software providers, exchanges, merchants, and users. They then coordinate to switch over to the new rules at a planned time, determined by a specific block number known as a block height. At that planned time, two incompatible blocks are mined, one that is valid for the incumbent participants, and the other that is valid for the rebellious participants. The blockchain splits into two, because what is acceptable on one blockchain is not acceptable on the other. Consider the very first transaction that is created that breaks the old rules but conforms to the new rules. This rebellious transaction will be rejected by the old-school participants who will not propagate it, mine it, or add it to their blocks. However, it will be treated as valid by the rebellious validating nodes and will get mined by a rebellious miner, and the rebellious block will be added to the blockchains of the rebellious participants. So now, there are two blockchains recording transactions of two different coins which share a common history up to the point of the split. The coins will have different symbols and different names to differentiate them. Wallets need to be configured to accept the new coin. Exchanges need to list the new coin to create a market for it. And merchants and other participants need to accept the new coin. Media descriptions. Forks, or specifically chain splits, are often described in the media as a stock split. This is a poor analogy because in a stock split, more shares are created and assigned to shareholders, but the old and the new shares all represent the same thing. This is not the case in a cryptocurrency chain split. A spin-off is a more accurate analogy because in a spin-off, shareholders of the old company get new shares of a new company. This is similar to a fork, where holders of the original coin also get the new coin, which has different rules from the old coin. Hard forks versus soft forks. Sometimes the terms hard and soft fork are used. These terms refer to changes in the rules about what constitutes a valid transaction and block. A soft fork is a change in the rules that is backwards compatible, meaning that blocks created under the new changed rules will still be considered valid by participants who didn't upgrade. A hard fork is a change in the rules that is not backwards compatible, so that if some participants fail to upgrade, there will be a chain split. In practice, if changes to protocol rules are tightened or more constrained, this results in a soft fork, whereas if consensus rules are loosened, then this is a hard fork. Case study number one, Bitcoin Cash. Bitcoin Cash is a currently successful fork of Bitcoin, created as a hard fork. Bitcoin Cash and Bitcoin, sometimes called Bitcoin Core to reduce confusion, had a shared history until block 478,558, when the chain split. The philosophy of Bitcoin Cash is to more accurately reflect the vision of the original Satoshi white paper of fast, cheap, decentralized, censorship-resistant digital cash, and proponents believe that Bitcoin Core has not been making progress towards this vision. So far, Bitcoin Cash has been regarded as successful, as it is supported by popular wallet software, merchants accept it, and it trades on popular cryptocurrency exchanges under the ticker symbol BCH. Case study number two, Ethereum Classic. Ethereum Classic is a currently successful fork of Ethereum. It was created, as we saw earlier, After the DAO was hacked and more than $50 million of Ether was drained from it, as we have seen, the Ethereum community deliberated as to what to do, and the majority decided to hard fork at block 1,920,000 and restore the hacked Ether to the original holders. But a minority of the community saw this restoration as revisionist and anti-ethical and refused to hard fork. So they continued on with the original blockchain, theft and all. So in a sense, Ethereum itself is the fork, as it had additional code to neutralize the hack of the DAO, and Ethereum Classic is the original Ethereum. But because Classic was in the minority, it is regarded as the fork. Ethereum Classic trades on cryptocurrency exchanges under the ticker symbol ETC and is widely supported by wallets. Other forks. Forks are trendy. It's easier to take something that is proven to already work than to build something from scratch. And as cryptocurrencies tend to be open source, it is legal to copy the code, tweak it, and run it. Community building with a forked chain is easier than building a new blockchain, too. Anyone who had a balance on the original chain will also have a balance on the new chain, so they are more likely to support a fork where they have a balance, rather than support a new blank blockchain. People saw that Bitcoin Cash successfully forked and retained some currency value, so this spurred many copycats to try the same. However, there was only so much energy in the cryptocurrency space, and there seems to be some fork fatigue. Some commentators predict that many future forks will fail. BitMEX research provides a list of forks that have happened since the Bitcoin Cash fork. You can see this as image 4.50 in the supplementary PDF. Part 5. Digital Tokens. What are digital tokens? Terminology is evolving quickly. While Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies are all referred to as digital tokens in a generic sense, as in, a Bitcoin is a digital token, a distinction now seems to be emerging between cryptocurrencies, such as Bitcoin and Ether, whose coins are tracked on their respective blockchains, and tokens, which are usually issued by an issuer during an initial coin offering, or ICO, and tracked within smart contracts on Ethereum's blockchain. The word token can mean different things depending on the context in which it is used. What are tokens? What is a digital token? Why is it important? It's easy to understand what a token is in the physical world. Think of round plastic things like casino chips, beer vouchers, or fairground ride tokens. Essentially, a token is something which is issued by an issuer, the casino, the beer festival organizers, or the fairground, and can be used in a specific context or in a specific marketplace, perhaps under specific conditions or timings. The token has value because the context gives it value. But if you take the token outside the context, the value decreases or falls to zero. While a $5 casino chip is worth $5 inside a casino, it would be worth less on the other side of the world. And fairground ride tokens would not be worth much, if anything, outside the context of the fairground. But what do people mean when they talk about digital tokens? If you digitize a beer voucher or casino chip, does it become a digital token? Is a balance in a PayPal wallet a digital token? Is a bank balance a digital token? What's special about a Bitcoin? The characteristics of the different types of token vary widely, and generalizations lead to confusion. In this section, I hope to clarify the different types and characteristics of tokens by differentiating between blockchain-native tokens, like Bitcoin and Ether, asset-backed tokens, like IOUs, and utility tokens that can be spent on goods or services at a later date, usually recorded within smart contracts on the Ethereum blockchain as ERC-20 standard tokens. but may also be recorded on other blockchains. Owning a token. We can be more specific and use the term crypto asset. Ownership of any crypto asset, whether it is a cryptocurrency or a token, is vested in the person who has the private key that corresponds to the address with which the token is associated. This private key allows that person, the owner, to create and sign transactions, releasing the token and assigning it to someone else. In some respects, crypto assets are like bearer assets. If you hold the private key, it is yours. The rules of blockchains require that if a token is to be sent, that is, if a payment is to be made, the transaction must include the digital signature related to the token's current address. This digital signature is validated by all of the blockchain network participants. The digital signature acts as a single point of authentication to signal that it really is the address owner who is making the payment instruction. With online banking, in contrast, you prove that you are you, then instruct the bank to do something on your behalf. You provide a username and password and usually a one-time PIN created on another device, a so-called second factor. Authenticating with a username and password has its benefits. If you forget or lose your password, you can have it reset if you supply more proof that you are the account holder. With a crypto asset, transactions must have a valid digital signature. If you lose your private key, you cannot access your asset, and you cannot have it reset. If your private key is copied, the thief can make transactions on your behalf, and you can't stop them. In this respect, cryptocurrencies are much less forgiving than banks. Not even those who maintain the ledger can alter the balances because they can't provide the necessary digital signatures. This is different to a traditional ledger maintained by a bank, which can alter balances without any kind of cryptographic proofs. Some people say that with Bitcoin, you are your own bank. You don't instruct an entity to make a payment on your behalf. You are responsible for making payments yourself. Categorizing tokens. New tokens are emerging almost daily. Their properties vary. While segregation and separation are difficult, I currently think of tokens in three categories. 1. Native blockchain tokens, which are essential for the underlying blockchain to work or be incentivized. Native tokens are usually the incentive for block creators to do their work. Cryptocurrencies are usually native tokens. 2. Asset-backed tokens, which represent title or ownership to some real-world asset held in trust by a custodian. And 3. Utility tokens, which represent a claim on a service provided by the issuer of the token. Data website onchainfx.com provides these categories for digital tokens. 1. Currency tokens. Currency tokens are native blockchain assets intended to be used as money. Networks classified as currencies typically do not have many features beyond those necessary to define and transfer the native blockchain asset. 2. Platform tokens. Platform tokens are required to use general-purpose decentralized networks that support a wide variety of possible applications. Platform tokens are often used specifically to mediate use of the platform. That is, tokens are used to pay gas in order to access the platform's functionality. 3. Utility tokens. Utility tokens are native to decentralized networks that are designed for specific application types. That is, they are open networks but designed with a specific use case in mind. For example, decentralized storage and decentralized asset exchange are both use types for which targeted networks and their corresponding tokens are being built. The terms utility tokens and protocol tokens are often used to describe the same type of token. 4. Brand tokens. Brand tokens exist as tradable digital assets for use mostly on one company or entity's platform. Some brand tokens may evolve into more generalized utility tokens over time. And 5. Security tokens. Security tokens represent a claim on a specific cash flow or off-chain asset. Networks which generate fees for service that accrue to token holders explicitly grant voting rights to token holders, or where tokens are said to be backed by some other asset, such as gold or company equity, are security tokens. In the section on ICOs, we'll discuss how tokens may be classified by regulators as financial securities. For now, I'll describe my own distinctions between native tokens, asset-backed tokens, and utility tokens. Native blockchain tokens. Here, I'll use the word token generically to mean any units recorded on any blockchain. Cryptocurrencies such as Bitcoin and Ethereum use native tokens, Bitcoin and Ether, respectively. These units are needed to incentivize miners to create valid blocks without an external party to fund the participants. Ether is also used to pay Ethereum miners to run smart contracts. The tokens are also known as intrinsic or built-in tokens. They are inseparable from their blockchain systems and are used both as an incentive for participants to keep the blockchains running and as a payment mechanism to use the blockchains. How do these native tokens come into existence? Intrinsic tokens are created by the same blockchain software that keeps track of ownership of these units. They are created transparently by software in the mining process according to a schedule defined by the blockchain protocol. All participants agree to abide by the protocol rules. What backs native tokens? Nothing backs these native tokens. They just exist and have value. The gold analogy is useful here. When you hold physical gold, it is not backed by anything. It is just valuable in itself. With native tokens, there is no issuer to whom you can return a token to redeem for any underlying asset, any more than you can go to a gold issuer, Mother Nature, and redeem your gold for something else. Satoshi Nakamoto created the idea of Bitcoin, but it is not the issuer of the Bitcoin units. Bitcoin miners create Bitcoins according to some mutually agreed constraints, but they are no more the issuer of Bitcoins than a gold prospector is the issuer of the gold that they discover. Where do native tokens derive their value? Their value comes partly from their usefulness and partly from their speculative value. Let's use the gold analogy again. Gold derives its value from two sources. Firstly, it is useful for filling gaps in your teeth, for certain technical or industrial processes, and, because it is pretty and doesn't tarnish, for wearing as jewelry. Secondly, gold has a speculative value arising from its scarcity, general desirability, and its long price history. Native tokens are useful because they can be used in a specific context. The context for the Bitcoin token is the Bitcoin blockchain, and the context for the Ether token is the Ethereum blockchain. Bitcoins, like gold, don't represent an asset. They are the asset. As considered in our earlier discussion about different types of money, Bitcoins are representative money. Native tokens also have speculative value, as some people want to buy and hold them, just like any other asset that speculators can buy and hold. Examples of native tokens. Some of the more well-known examples of intrinsic tokens are 1. BTC on the Bitcoin blockchain. 2. ETH on Ethereum. 3. NXT on the NXT platform. And 4. XRP on the Ripple network. There are many more, and they all differ slightly. Since 2018, native tokens that are not issued or backed by anyone have been increasingly described as cryptocurrencies. The word token is increasingly confined to those tokens issued by projects which are redeemable for a product or service at a later stage. But definitional boundaries are blurred. For example, Ether, although widely described as a cryptocurrency, was issued by the Ethereum Foundation during their crown sale, whereas Bitcoin has not been issued by anyone. EOS tokens were issued before their blockchain went live, and those tokens can be swapped into native tokens that run on their blockchain. I suspect that terminology will continue to be. What are intrinsic tokens for? As discussed, intrinsic tokens are the incentives for miners to do their jobs, but each blockchain has its nuances. We have explored Bitcoin and Ether in detail earlier. Ripple and NXT are two other cryptocurrencies which have some interesting twists. The Ripple network uses tokens called Ripples, with the ticker symbol XRP, aligned with the ISO currency standards. On the Ripple network, all the Ripple tokens were created at the beginning. All the Ripple that will ever exist were pre-mined and shared out among key participants. Each transaction on the Ripple network needs to include a small amount of Ripple as a transaction fee. Unlike Bitcoin and Ethereum, Ripples are destroyed by block makers rather than being claimed by them, as is the case with Bitcoin and Ethereum. Therefore, the total number of Ripples in circulation decreases with time. The Ripples destroyed in each transaction ensures that transactions have a tiny cost, preventing transaction spam, which can happen if transactions are costless to create. The NXT network uses pre-mined NXT tokens. Each transaction on the NXT network requires a fee to be added. The fee goes to the block maker. In NXT, this is called a forger instead of a miner. Therefore, the total number of NXT remains constant with time. Asset-backed tokens. Any financial asset can be recorded as a token, either directly, where the token is the financial asset, or as a depository receipt, where the token is a claim on a custodian for the financial asset. You may think of a share or a bond as a physical object, but financial assets are nothing but agreements between parties, usually an issuer and the owner of the asset. For example, a share of a company is a legal agreement between the issuer company and the owner of the share. A bond is a legal agreement between the issuer and the holder of the bond. A loan is a legal agreement between the borrower and lender. Money itself is an agreement between two parties. Deposits in a bank account are an agreement between the bank and the depositor with many provisions, including daily transaction limits, daily withdrawal limits, interest, etc. A banknote is an agreement between the central bank and the bearer. These agreements can all be represented as tokens recorded on blockchains or distributed ledgers. Asset-backed digital tokens take a number of forms. 1. Depository receipt tokens. 2. Title tokens. Or 3. Contract tokens. Depository receipt tokens. Depository receipts are tokens that are claims on a specific entity for an underlying item. You can think of them as a digital version of a goldsmith's receipt for gold stored in their vault, or like a digital version of a cloakroom ticket or left luggage ticket. The tokens represent ownership of the underlying item held in trust by a custodian. The receipt could be for real-world physical objects, such as gold, or a financial asset, such as a share of a company. When a token holder wants to redeem a token, they go to the issuer with the token to claim back the underlying asset. The issuer then destroys the token once they have returned the underlying asset. Title tokens. Title tokens are a slightly different concept. They are the digital document that represents proof of ownership of an asset. For example, a digital title document to a car or house. Unlike a depository receipt token, the item is not necessarily under someone else's custody. How do asset-backed digital tokens work? Let's take the example of Gold Chain Inc., a fictitious entity. It stores physical gold bullion in its vault on behalf of itself and its account holders who have bought some of that gold. It issues digital tokens called Gold Chain Oz to the account holders when they buy that gold. Each token represents 1 ounce of the gold bullion stored. These gold tokens are recorded on a blockchain. They may be recorded in smart contract on the public Ethereum blockchain, or on a private Ethereum blockchain, as assets on a number of other public blockchains or private blockchains, such as Corda. It doesn't really matter for these illustrative purposes. What matters is the ability for a customer of Gold Chain Inc. to withdraw the tokens and keep them in a wallet where they, and only they, have the private keys. Let's assume you want to acquire 1 ounce of their gold bullion. So, 1. You create an account with Gold Chain Inc. by going to their website. 2. You make a bank transfer of fiat funds to Gold Chain's bank account to fund your account. 3. After a period of time, hours or days, depending on how long your bank transfer takes to get to Gold Chain's bank, Gold Chain sends you an email indicating they have checked their bank account and have received your funds. You can now buy gold tokens. 4. You log in again and click Buy for 1 ounce of gold at $1,500 per ounce. 5. The money in your Gold Chain account drops by $1,500, and you see you have 1 Gold Chain Oz token in your account. In the background, Gold Chain reclassifies 1 ounce of gold in its books from gold owned by Gold Chain Inc. to customer assets. Gold Chain has sold some gold to you, but instead of shipping the physical gold to your home, it has issued you a token representing that gold. The gold token is still under the control of Gold Chain Inc. because you haven't yet withdrawn it to a wallet entirely under your control. 6. If you wish to have the gold token completely under your control, you can withdraw the Gold Chain Oz token to your independent address. Gold Chain will send a transaction to the blockchain transferring 1 Gold Chain Oz token from their address to your address. 7. You can keep the token, give it to your friends, sell it, or do whatever you want with it. Let's say you transfer it to Alice. 8. Eventually, Alice wants to redeem the token real gold, if that is an option, or sell it for US dollars. She can do so by creating an account at Gold Chain Inc., transferring the gold token from her blockchain address to their blockchain address, and requesting delivery of gold, or selling the token back to Gold Chain Inc., assuming these options are available. If Gold Chain Inc., who controls the warehouse, is a central point of failure and control, what is the value in using tokens? Why doesn't Gold Chain Inc. just use an Excel spreadsheet? Firstly, the use of cryptography and blockchain technology makes the tokens very hard to fake, and this creates more transparency over the number of tokens issued and held by customers. The warehouse can prove that there are not more tokens than they have gold in their vault. An auditor would periodically match the amount of physical gold to the number of tokens outstanding. Secondly, existing processes of passing title documents or receipts may be manual, time-consuming, or operationally challenging. Transfer of digital tokens may be more efficient, and increasingly so as new software and hardware is developed to manage digital assets. Finally, in a peer-to-peer system, the warehouse itself doesn't have to be online and participate in transactions between customers. All it has to do is issue and redeem the digital tokens. The trading of the tokens can occur on whatever digital asset exchange or exchanges are chosen, rather than being managed centrally by the warehouse. The settlement of the tokens is recorded on the chosen blockchain. This leads to a segregation of responsibilities and opens up the possibility of competition for each element of the end-to-end trade lifecycle. The warehouse's job is to store gold, issue tokens representing that gold, and transfer gold to any party legitimately redeeming the token, as it would have done under a paper-based system of old. Trading, settlement, liquidity, collateralization, and other functions unrelated to storage can be done elsewhere without the warehouse having to update their records or manage those functions. The title documents or receipts, by virtue of being on a blockchain, can be trusted as genuine and uncounterfeitable, and the ownership or liens on any particular lump of gold can be made more transparent, potentially reducing the confusion relating to who has what claim on which piece of gold. Asset-backed tokens are easy to transfer. Blockchains enable predictable and secure record keeping. The key risk is that the issuer must remain solvent. If the gold is stolen from the vault, or if the issuer becomes bankrupt, whether from fraud or otherwise, asset-backed tokens can become valueless. Contract tokens. Contract tokens represent a contractual obligation between the issuer of the token and the bearer of the token, or between two parties who jointly agree to hold the token. For example, a token could represent a share of a company or an interest rate swap between two parties. Shares can be issued by a company in the form of a token, and the owner of the token is the shareholder. Two parties who agree on an interest rate swap enter into an agreement which is represented by the token. Contract tokens are slightly different from depository receipts. In the case of a contract token, the token is the share, whereas with a depository receipt, the token is a claim on a custodian who is safekeeping the share. Utility tokens. The holder of a utility token can redeem the token from a specific entity for a product or service rather than for an asset. Sale of utility tokens is a popular ICO strategy. Utility tokens represent a liability of the issuing company. Eventually, when the product or service becomes available, a token holder can redeem their token for that product or service. In this respect, ICOs that issue utility tokens are performing a pre-sale. Transactions. A transaction is just an entry to the ledger that changes the state of the ledger. We have previously discussed transactions that change the ownership of tokens, but transactions can also represent changes to the token itself, if allowed by the rules, for that particular token. For example, a token representing a share could change status from pre-dividend to ex-dividend if signed by the right participant and a dividend is paid. That same token could be marked with voted after a shareholder vote has taken place. A token representing a bond could change status from coupon due to coupon paid if accompanied by a transaction that pays the coupon. A utility token representing a service could be marked as partially redeemed if the service had a number of elements to it, and so on. At this stage in the evolution of crypto assets, we are just scratching the surface of what is possible. Tracking of physical objects. Blockchains and distributed ledgers work best when everything can be recorded on the chain, that is, when everything is digital. So blockchains are great for cryptocurrencies or for tokens representing legal agreements between entities, whether shares, bonds, debts, or even a future claim on an entity. These tokens can be recorded digitally without any physical object being present. But problems start emerging when you want to track physical objects, such as handbags, food, art, or elephants. The interest in digital tokens for tracking ownership of physical objects seems to have come from the fact that Bitcoins are traceable. This is true in a narrow sense. You can trace the provenance of any specific Bitcoins through all of the previous addresses that they belonged to, all the way back to where they were first mined. This is possible because every transaction is recorded on the Bitcoin blockchain, and anyone can download the full blockchain and interrogate it. The provenance of Bitcoins is traceable because that is the way Bitcoin works. You can't make a Bitcoin transaction off the chain because The very definition of a Bitcoin transaction is that it's recorded on the chain, and the UTXO model forces you to specify which Bitcoins are moving where, resulting in a complete chain of provenance on the chain. Can we extend that concept easily to real-world objects? According to an article published online by Fortune in October 2016, Walmart and IBM are partnering to put Chinese pork on a blockchain. Apparently, blockchains may be used to track the provenance of pork and to stop potentially dangerous food from getting to consumers. But stop for a second and think. How on earth would this work? I don't know much about the pig supply chain, but I suppose you have a bunch of companies who do everything from breeding the piglets, feeding them, slaughtering them, cutting them up, shipping them, packing, and delivering. Eventually, pork cutlets end up on the supermarket shelf for people to buy or on a plate in a restaurant. So all the participants in the pig supply chain could have an address on a blockchain with Pigcoin tokens issued presumably by the farmer that represent pigs. Movement of Pigcoin is recorded immutably on Pigchain. When a farmer sells a pig to another farmer, the seller says, "Hey, what's your Pigchain address? Let me send you some Pigcoins," and makes a corresponding Pigcoin transaction on Pigchain to represent the movement of the pig. But then, one fateful day, the buyer is a slaughterhouse who chops the pigs up into small bits and sends those different bits to different parties. Ah, but of course a pig coin, like Bitcoin, is divisible. So the slaughterhouse splits up a pig coin and sends fractions to different buyers. But which fraction is which part of the pig? Do we need a trotter coin and a left rear flank coin? What happens if one party doesn't have an account on Pigchain? What if a party loses their private key and all of their snout coins end up trapped in their account while the real underlying snouts are being distributed? What if, horror of horrors, a bad person swaps out, in real life, a high-quality pig for a low-quality pig, but then still sends the pig coin to the buyer saying, "Oh, look at the pig coin's provenance on Pigchain. The pig you are buying is definitely high quality. You can download the pig chain and see for yourself." And when a pig becomes part of a sausage? Then how would that work? We will need breadcrumb coin, herb coin, nasty bits of pig coin,